Lesson 17. Juvenile Delinquency. Text A. Jennifer got off the bus from the university and began walking towards the flat she shared with two other students. On her way, she had to buy some food and stopped in one of the shops in the street. It was run by an Asian family, and although the prices were a little higher than in the big supermarket further down the street, she did get a lot of her shopping there. The vegetables were fresher, and they had various things she couldn't get elsewhere. Mr. Patel, the owner of the shop, was checking through a list, but smiled, as he always did, when he saw her come in. She picked up a wire basket and walked towards the back of the shop where the rice was kept. The shop was divided by three long aisles, with rows of shelves crammed with all sorts of things. Except for her and Mr. Patel, there were only two other people there. They were two teenage boys, and they were standing at the end of one of the aisles. She glanced at them as she passed. They were both wearing long, old-fashioned overcoats, and they looked rather ridiculous in them because the coats were too big. But such things were popular with some teenagers at the time. "Watch out, stupid!" she heard one of them whisper to the other. She walked on to the next aisle and found the rice she was looking for. Then she heard something else. It sounded like a tin dropping on the floor. She peered through a gap in the shelf and caught a glimpse of one of the boys bending down. She saw him pick up a tin of food, but instead of putting it in the shopping basket, he dropped it into the inside pocket of his long overcoat. Jennifer glanced back down the aisle. She could see Mr. Patel at the cash till, still checking through his list. Then she looked through the gap in the shelf again. The boys still had their backs to her. "Come on, let's get out of here," she heard one of them say. At the same time, she saw one of them put another tin in his overcoat pocket. They moved away from her. She could no longer see what they were doing or hear what they were saying. When she got to the till, the two boys were in front of her. She watched them pay for the few things they had in the basket. They had both buttoned their coats and fastened them with their belts. Mr. Patel did not seem suspicious at all. He even smiled at them as they were about to leave. Jennifer opened her mouth to say something. Text B. The only crime I have ever been connected with was unsuccessful. One summer night I went to bed, leaving my bedroom door open because it was very hot. During the night I was woken up by the sound of a match being struck. For a moment I thought it must be the friend I lived with, but then I remembered he was away. I felt certain there was someone in the room. I saw the outline of a man standing near the door. I was almost certain the man was a burglar. Without thinking what I was doing, I shouted loudly and jumped out of bed to catch the man. As I ran across the garden, I suddenly realized I was doing something very foolish. The burglar I was chasing might be carrying a knife. I went straight back into the house and locked all the doors to protect myself. This was a very small crime which did not succeed, but crime is a serious problem in Britain. One sort of crime which particularly worries people is juvenile delinquency, that is, crimes committed by young people. For some years, juvenile delinquency has been increasing. There are two main sorts of juvenile crime, stealing and violence. Most people do not understand why young people commit these crimes. There are, I think, a large number of different reasons. These crimes are not usually committed by people who are poor or in need. Young people often dislike and resent the adult world. They will do things to show that they are rebels. Also, in Britain today, it is easier for young people to commit crimes because they have more freedom to go where they like and more money to do what they like. There are two other possible causes which are worth mentioning. More and more people in Britain live in large towns. In a large town, no one knows who anyone else is or where they live. But in the village I come from, crimes are rare because everybody knows everyone else. Although it is difficult to explain, I think the last cause is very important. Perhaps there is something wrong with our society which encourages violence and crime. It is a fact that all the time children are exposed to films and reports about crime and violence. Many people do not agree that this influences young people, but I think that young people are very much influenced by the society they grow up in. I feel that the fault may be as much with our whole society as with these young people. Additional information. It's just before school starts when they check the pupils for guns. By now, The 1,600 students at Chester High School in Philadelphia have got used to it. One by one, they go through a metal detector gate, like the ones at an airport at the main entrance to their school. The beeper alarm is constantly going off, indicating some metal object in the pupils' pockets. Mostly, it is a key or coins. Such searches, in some schools a regular routine, in others a spot check, are part of the attempt of school authorities in the United States to keep students from bringing into the classroom their knives, revolvers, and machine guns. The metal detector checks have already become commonplace in schools in Philadelphia, Detroit, and New York. A school in Fairfax, on the outskirts of Washington, D.C., will soon begin them. School administrators decided that something finally had to be done after the various shootouts and discoveries of weapons in schools around the country had made headlines for weeks running. On January the 26th, at Woodrow Wilson School in Washington, a teenager shot and wounded four others in a fight over a place to sit in the school cafeteria. On February the 9th, teachers confiscated a semi-automatic pistol from two 13-year-olds at a school in the Washington suburb of Silver Spring after they had threatened other students with the weapon. 6 days later, a student at Cramer High School in Washington threatened a schoolmate with a sawed-off shotgun. Asked why he did it, the youngster said the other had stared so stupidly at him. The list of such incidents goes on, and in some cases they are fatal. According to the California-based National School Safety Center, NSSC, in a recent report, there were 360,000 violent incidents in American schools in 1986, the last year for which statistics are available. The incidents ranged from fistfights to shootouts, and 70,000 weapons were confiscated, including 1,700 pistols and rifles. Since then, says Ronald Stevens, the director of NSSC, the number of incidents involving guns in schools has risen considerably. Teachers and security experts have a hard time explaining why teenagers want to bring lethal weapons with them to school. Some want to impress their schoolmates, believes Stevens. They feel that a gun is a symbol of power and control. Others have a feeling that they need weapons to protect themselves. School authorities see the rise in weapons and violence above all as being connected to drugs in American high schools. Armed youth gangs divide up the drug trade turf among themselves. According to the NSSC, the older gang members use the younger newcomers as weapons depots. Lynn Siper of the National Crime Prevention Council in Washington believes that youths during their puberty lean towards fighting out their conflicts instead of talking about them. Such drugs as cocaine and crack add to their emotional disturbance. Siper and Stevens agree that the general level of violence on the streets of big American cities and the unimpeded access to guns play a role. America's citizens possess a total of 120 million firearms. Many of the revolvers and rifles which authorities confiscated in the schools had been legally acquired and registered by the students' parents. Lesson 18. How to Keep Fit. Text A. 10 years ago, I used to be very fit. I cycled to work and I got a lot of exercise at the weekends. I used to play tennis a lot and go for long walks. In those days, I didn't earn very much. I had a job in an office. It wasn't a very good job, but I had a lot of time to do the things I enjoyed doing. Then, about 8 years ago, I got a much better job. The pay was better. But the hours were a lot longer, too. I bought a car and drove to work every day. I began to take people out to lunch. Expense account lunches. And I began to put on weight, too. I stopped playing tennis and going for long walks at the weekend because I just didn't have any time for things like that anymore. There's a lot of stress in a job like mine. Perhaps that's why I started drinking more than I used to. For example, I used to have only half a glass of whiskey when I got home. Then I started filling the glass to the top. Then I had another glass, and then another. I started smoking a lot, too. I never used to smoke at all. 2 months ago, I had a heart attack. At first, I just couldn't believe it. "I'm too young," I said. Luckily, it wasn't very serious. I was in hospital a few days, and they did a lot of tests. The doctor advised me to stop smoking and to eat less. He told me to do a lot of other things, too. But I don't see how I can do some of them and keep my job. For example, he advised me to work less and get more exercise. But I just haven't any time. My job takes everything out of me. Sometimes I wonder if I should get another job. Perhaps I could do something like I used to do. But if I do that, I won't earn as much. I have a family to support. I have to think of them, too. I just don't know what I should do. What do you think? Text B. Here is one person who really believes in keeping fit. Her name is Mrs. Laura Taylor. She is 45 but looks at least 10 years younger. Let's listen to her story. It all started about 2 years ago. In those days, things were very different. I was overweight. I used to smoke a lot, about 30 cigarettes a day. I never got any exercise. I used to stay at home all day. I never went out into the fresh air, except to do the shopping. And even then I used to take the car. One day, I looked at myself in the mirror. My God, I thought, I look terrible. I tried to touch my toes. I couldn't do it. I found an old dress. I couldn't put it on. It was too small. Or rather, I was too fat. The next day, I tried to jog a little. At first, it was terrible. I mean, I just couldn't run, not even a short distance. And at first, people used to laugh at me. Why are you running? Are you in a hurry? They shouted. But now I've completely changed the way I live. I've stopped eating meat, and I've started eating far more fresh vegetables. My husband and daughter have started that, too. At first, they didn't like the new food, but they've changed. About 6 months ago, I sold my car and bought a bike. Recently, I've started doing yoga exercises. My husband often goes cycling with me now, and my daughter jogs with me in the evening. They've both lost weight and are much healthier than they used to be, too. Additional information. Yoga. Have you ever tried to hold your breath for a long time and then let it out slowly? This is one of the techniques of an ancient Indian discipline known as yoga. For thousands of years, people have used yoga to help search for happiness and contentment. Students of yoga often study for as long as 20 years before becoming masters or yogis. They learn many different physical exercises. These exercises are designed to put the students in good physical condition. Then they can concentrate on deep religious thoughts without worrying about physical discomforts. Many yoga exercises involve putting the body into difficult positions. Some of them are very hard to learn. Have you ever tried to fold your legs over one another? This is one of the basic yoga positions. It is called the lotus position. Most people find it difficult to stay in that position for even a few minutes, but yogis train themselves to remain in the lotus position for hours or even days. They are taught to overcome the physical discomforts of holding these positions. Other exercises and rules teach concentration. Yogis feel this is the key to finding inner peace. This kind of concentration is called meditation. Yogis and many other people practice meditation. They claim that it makes them feel relaxed and peaceful. Some people say that it makes them feel better, just as good exercise does, but other people claim that it is a way of achieving a strong religious feeling. These people say that meditation helps them feel much closer to God. The word yoga itself comes from an ancient Sanskrit word meaning union. What kind of union do you think the word refers to? Why would people want to have this kind of experience?
Lesson 19. Why go to school? Text A. Leslie, you're a teacher. How does the English school system work?
Well, first of all, most children start school at the age of 5, and they can't leave school until the age of 16, which is just, you know, the age group has just been recently raised. They will go to a primary school from the age of 5 until 11. And previously they used to take an 11-plus examination, which would then determine whether they would go to a grammar school or, alternatively, a secondary modern school. But now we have a new system where children aren't divided off at the age of 11 and will go into a comprehensive system of schooling and will do the things that they're best able to do at certain ages. And if they want to take the exams, they are able to at the age of 16.
Do you think that's an improvement to the system?
Well, theoretically, it's supposed to be much better because it stops separating children off at the age of 11 and gives them a better chance. In fact, what usually happens is that those children who would have gone to a grammar school tend to be at the top end of the comprehensive system. And those that would have gone to a secondary modern school find themselves at the lower levels of the school.
Do you think that the present school system is an efficient way of educating children?
Well, if you accept that, you know, there have to be schools, it seems to work fairly efficiently. Of course, one of our great problems in England is that we have very large classes, and it would be very nice if we could reduce that by at least half. Instead of there being 40 children in a class, there are only 20. And so that each child gets more individual attention, so that their own particular needs just aren't passed over.
Do you think the subjects that children study today are adapted to present-day society?
It would be very good if more children at school had the opportunity of learning about the society they live in economic terms and in social terms, so they're much more aware of the problems that we face today. But I also think that education isn't only something that has to be relevant. I think education can be just a gradual extension of oneself. And I don't think it's important for subjects to be seen only in terms of how useful they are when you leave school, but how much you enjoy them and how much they mean to you.
David, what do you do in an average day at school? It mainly consists of English and maths, which takes up a lot of the lesson time, and then, like on Mondays, for example, where we would do, I don't know, maths, English, art, history, and then Tuesdays would be some more English, probably. History, religious studies, physics, whatever I'm taking now, which is O-levels, which is 9 subjects in all. I see. So you can choose the subject you want to take for O-level. You don't have to take every subject in the school? No. What about games, and drama and things like that? We have about an hour and a half of games a week, and for about an hour a week we do a thing known as a social studies, which is it's a kind of cross-section of what life will be after we leave school, where we do drama. We study ecology, sociology, etc. It's not O-level. We don't take an O-level in it. It's just for experience. Janet, do you think that your daughters gain a tremendous amount from their education?
I think they gain a certain amount of necessary knowledge, yes. But I wish it was broader. I wish that instead of being driven towards passing exams that they had, certainly at this stage of adolescence, the chance to really broaden their outlook completely and not feel this necessity to read towards passing an exam, to collecting a piece of paper at the end of it.
Do you have any specific ways in which you think time at school could be improved?
Yes, I think there could be a lot more encouragement in doing things for their own sake, for getting the satisfaction out of them, rather than this rat race that everybody's forced into. For what is achieved at the end, I think a lot more should be done to encourage people to get the value out of it themselves.
Do you think that education is just something that takes place inside a school building, or is it an activity which takes place not only outside, but right the way through your life?
I think it starts the moment you're born, and that it's going on all around you. It's not just taking place in a school building. It should be part of your whole life.
Text B. In 1967, The Observer, one of Britain's leading Sunday newspapers, organized a competition for secondary school children. They had to write about the school that I'd like. This meant, of course, that they also had to say what was wrong with the schools they had. David, 15. But what is the main purpose of schools to educate young people so that when they go out into the world, they will be prepared for it? But are they? We learn our mathematics, English, physics, etc. But what do you learn about sex, marriage, and things like this? These are just as important, but we don't learn very much about them. Carol, 17. Give us more variety. Give us the chance to visit factories more frequently, to talk with miners, dustmen, doctors, lawyers, jailbirds and drug addicts too. Give us the chance to visit remand homes and prisons. We want to know more about life and less about books. Robin, 16. What a bore school is nowadays, the same as it has been for hundreds of years. What we get is the same old thing, teachers, outdated textbooks, and a class fed up to the teeth with the teacher and the school. What we need is one great change in the educational system of the country. Children do not want to be taught at, but want to find things for themselves. If a child is interested in the way a rabbit's heart works, let him go and find out by cutting one up. Irina, 15. Homework should not be given. Many of us would rather spend another hour at school than 2 hours at home doing an hour's homework, where we are constantly being distracted by television and such things. Sydney, 15. The first step must surely be to raise teachers' salaries by at least 50% so as to attract first-class people to the profession. And the only means of doing this is by offering salaries equal to their responsibility in shaping the hopes of tomorrow and competitive with those offered by industry. Christopher, 16. The discipline and life of the school would be based on freedom for the pupil. So freedom and a minimum of control would be important, and the pupils, male and female, would be treated as adults and allowed to see if they can live together in a community like intelligent people. Given this responsibility and freedom, the pupils obviously would not always be well-behaved and sensible, but they would, I believe, grow up to be mature and intelligent adults who are socially and in all other ways useful to the community. Margaret, 14. All this, i.e. freedom in schools, suggests that the school would always be chaotic, which would give all the pupils an insight into what life after school is like. Chaos. Additional information. I am beginning to feel the pressure of work. None of the courses are as simple as they appear to be. There are a lot of reference books to consult, and you can consider yourself lucky if you manage to get half of them from the library. Most copies seem to be permanently lent out. The reading rooms are always crowded, and you have to get there early in order to find a place. The biggest headache is our dormitory. Though there are desks for us to work at, nobody ever works there. For one thing, the room is so crowded that there is little elbow room, and it is so dark that we need the electric light, even in daytime. The worst is the human element. There are always those who don't want to work and won't let others work either. They either chat, sing, play the guitar, or listen to tapes. How I miss my little cubicle of a room at home. Perhaps it's only a reaction against my early excitement, but anyway, I am often overcome by low spirits. Sometimes I even think I'm wasting my time here and wish I had not come here at all. But of course I know they are only passing moods caused by my disillusionment. I find some of the teachers just hopeless and totally irresponsible. All they are interested in is to earn some extra money by moonlighting. In one way, they are to be sympathized with because they do need the extra money, what with their low salaries and the rising prices. but surely they shouldn't let us suffer as a result. My biggest disappointment is in my fellow students. Of course I am referring only to some, and perhaps they are only a minority. They are a far cry from my old image of college students. They dress and behave no better than the hooligans we often see in the streets. I really don't know how they manage to get into the university, for they don't seem to be interested in their studies at all. All they care for is to have a good time, as though to enter university is an end in itself. They hold dances every Saturday evening, or play cards in the dormitories deep into the night, drinking and smoking heavily. What's more, they always jump the queue in the dining halls and quarrel with anyone who tries to stop them. Once they even came to blows. What a disgrace! But despite all this, college life is opening up for me a new vista that brings as much excitement as enlightenment. Here we can talk about anything under the sun. I had always thought myself well-read, and my classmates at school had looked up to me for my wide general knowledge. But now I've come to realize how ignorant I really am. Just from casual conversations and informal discussions, I've learnt more about the world and society in the past 2 months than what I learned from all the formal classes at school. Also, I found many extracurricular lectures by guest speakers most stimulating. One in particular inspired me very much, a lecture on symphonic music by a young conductor from the Central Conservatory. Before, music used to be merely a collection of beautiful sounds to me, but now I am constantly discovering new and hidden meaning behind all these sounds. One thing I am sure, college life is and will be a most colourful and fruitful period in my whole life.
听力课堂，欢迎你。
听力课堂，欢迎你。
听啊，讲啊。